from KQED. It's the California Report magazine, and today we're going back in time to 1970, when this song, Free Bobby Now, was recorded in San Jose. An anthem to Bobby Seale, a Black Panther Party leader who was locked up in jail at the time. The song was one of a handful recorded by the party's house band, The Lumpin'. Their music was explosive. The band's mission was to spark social revolution through the Trojan horse of funk and soul. And they worked nonstop for the cause, playing packed concerts around California, New York, Philly, and the Midwest. Their militant agenda would put them up against the intertwined forces of white supremacy and racist police. But the band only lasted 11 months. I'm Sasha Coca, and we're devoting our whole show to a documentary from reporter Peter Gilstrap that originally aired on KCRW's Lost Notes. It's about the rise and fall of the Lumpin', an unlikely R&B group born out of another period of social upheaval.
We didn't join to say. We joined to be revolutionaries. We joined to make the revolution. We joined to be Panthers.
Michael Torrence didn't join the Black Panthers to sing. He says the Lumpin' weren't out to make hit records. They were out to change American culture.
In 1966, Huey Newton and Bobby Seale co-found the Black Panther Party. They're both students at Merritt Community College in Oakland. Within a few years, the party offers educational programs, food service, free medical care, and drug rehab to the Black community. And the Panthers lead the fight against rampant police brutality. By the end of the 60s, change is in the air and the Bay Area is ground zero. And Michael Torrence is a 21-year-old Black Panther. He's a true soldier, and he's dedicated to the cause.
Police were riding, you know, four or five deep. If you were out selling your papers, they would come and harass you, snatch your papers, maybe arrest you, threaten you. But at the same time, there was a lot of energy. And that's the best thing about it. You could really feel the energy, particularly among, you know, younger people, that we felt we could really make a change. Not only could we make a change, we were going to make a change. There was this commitment to die if necessary.
Those papers are the weekly Bible of party information, a publication called The Black Panther.
Wednesday night was distribution night where we would get out the paper. Everybody would come.
That's James Mott, now known as Satura Ned. In 1970, he's newly arrived from the Sacramento chapter. All the future members of the Lumpin' are in attendance that Wednesday night. Torrence, Mott, William Calhoun, and Clark Santa Rita Bailey. They all have musical backgrounds ranging from church choirs to pro-level experience, but when they meet, they're just loyal young soldiers taking orders along with everybody else.
And on those distribution nights when various chapters would all come together in the Bay Area to get the paper out, we would sing.
And we would sing at that point just doo-wop songs. So one night I went over there and the three of them were singing, so I joined in and we started harmonizing. We just blended in so cool.
And then what we would begin to do was we just would put other words to the popular songs. Because we would be singing what we called revolutionary songs, things to, you know, encourage us in the struggle. In terms of the Lumpin', it kind of grew out of that, just us singing together. Part of, I guess, the tradition of just singing while you work.
It's a typical Wednesday night. The four Panthers are at the print shop, stacking and racking and harmonizing into the night. But this time, there's somebody new listening. Emory Douglas, the party's Minister of Culture.
So after I got back to Central, Emery comes in and says, "Hey, brother, Comrade Jane." I said, "Yeah, Emery." He says, "You know, everybody relates to music." I said, "Yeah, Emery, they do." He said, "You guys sound good." He said, "We can create a group, and the group could be part of the Ministry of Culture, where we could be able to get that message out in the music."
Oh, yeah. Well, that was from when I first heard them.
Emery Douglas is the brilliant style guru and visual artist whose iconic posters and flyers helped brand the movement.
I just made suggestions, possibly adding some social justice context to the lyrics.
At this point, Bobby Seale and Huey Newton are both behind bars. So Douglas approaches Panther's chief of staff, David Hilliard. He understands the value of spreading the word through music, and he greenlights the project. He also gives the group a name, The Lumpin'.
Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, the Black Panther Party very proudly presents The Lumpin'!
It's a play on Karl Marx's idea of the lumpin' proletariat, the lower class that would rise up to crush the capitalist power structure.
At the time the party was coming about, political education, political awareness was growing tremendously.
Billy Jennings is a former Panther and the party's longtime historian.
In 1968 alone, James Brown put out a song that really changed everything, because black people prior to that time were referring themselves as Negro. You know, James Brown came out and said, "We're black and we're proud." And once that record came out, you could never go back and say you're a Negro. You can never go back. James Brown couldn't have did that in 68 if there wasn't a group like the Black Panther Party that had set up a foundation of knowledge already.
But there won't be no more.
Won't be no more.
There won't be no more.
Won't be no more. Rats, dirt, and kids who are hungry.
There won't be no.
It wasn't easy. It wasn't like, "Okay, guys, we started at 9, 5 o'clock. Your day was never ending. You might, if you were able to get some time, hey, look, we got 45 minutes to rehearse."
Whatever rehearsal we would do, we would have to do that after whatever other assignments or duties we had. So we had to go sell the papers. We had to do the breakfast program. We'd have to do the garbage run. We'd have to do security. We'd have to do whatever it is that any other Panther would do.
From the Panthers' perspective, the Lumpin' was not about show business. It was about contributing to the revolution.
As a matter of fact, for us, it was a point of pride to prove, you know, that we were 100% Panthers. Second, for us, was just political work. We never got paid. It was just, if this is how we can be helpful, if this is how we can be useful, if this will advance the cause, then this is what we'll do.
Now, only a few months since they were harmonizing to the oldies at the printing plant, their orders are to get on stage and get to work. Educate the people, spread the word, and earn money for the party. The Lumpin' assemble a 6-piece interracial backing band from local players sympathetic to the cause. They're called the Freedom Messengers. And they're good. They're tight. It's a professional show on par with almost any act. They've got the energy of James Brown and the dance moves and harmonies of the Temptations. But the lyrics are all about what the Panthers are all about.
And at that time, Bobby Seale had just been arrested in New Haven. And the first thing that we put together actually was "Bobby Must Be Set Free."
That song, titled "Free Bobby Now," was recorded at a studio in San Jose in August of 1970. Bill Calhoun, the group's songwriter, thought the session was intended to be a demo, but the Panthers decided to release the single as is, putting another one of Calhoun's songs, "No More," on the flip side. The record was released on the Panthers' own Seize the Time label, with credit to Black Panther Party Productions. It was promoted in the party newspaper and sold at live shows and Panther events. Any profits were funneled straight back into the party.
They say that he killed a brother, yeah. But this we know it just can't be, yeah. He's proven his love for his people. That's why Bobby must be set free. We're saying Bobby must be set free.
They took the craft seriously.
That's Ricky Vincent. He's the author of Party Music, the inside story of the Black Panthers band and how Black Power transformed soul music. It's a subject he knows well. His mother was an early Panther.
People get ready, there's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on.
When they did People Get Ready, by Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions, they hit those notes that you had to hit that shows respect for those aspirations that were in that song in 1964-65. The Lumpin' flipped the lyrics, obviously, and instead of saying people get ready, there's a train a-coming, they said people get ready, the revolution's come. Right? You don't need a ticket, you need a loaded gun. And it was like, wait a minute, that is soul music the way it's supposed to be sung, but oh, those are not lyrics the way we've heard them before.
The Lumpins start headlining their own shows. Their single isn't getting radio play. Free Bobby Now is considered just too controversial, but word of mouth and constant promotion in the Panther newspaper are drawing crowds. The group are gigging weekly, doing benefits and playing college campuses up and down the West Coast. And when they're not headlining their own shows, they're on bills with the Grateful Dead, Carla Thomas, and Curtis Mayfield. In the winter of 1970, the band hits the road for a tour of the Midwest and the East Coast. The crowds are enthusiastic, but tension is in the air.
And I'll never forget this.
David Levinson is the Freedom Messengers' 19-year-old sax player. After a show at the University of Minnesota, a snowstorm is kicking in. The band is packing up their gear when they're approached by members of the Black Student Union.
They invited the Lumpin' and the Black members of the band to stay with them, but they didn't want the white members of the band, of which there were two of us.
Oh, well, who are those white guys? Excuse me? They're part of the Lumpin' band. Well, you know, they can't stay. Well, he told them, look, you we're not staying if they're not staying. I said, this is a people's revolution, and these are our brothers that we stand behind.
The Lumpin' are also in the crosshairs of the cops wherever they go. Late one night, after a college show in New Jersey, the police follow the band down an empty road heading out of town.
Well, what they did was one car got in front of us, slowed down, and the other one got right behind us. And they waited for that real dark area to pull us over. This was part of the intimidation, right? You know, by four of them, they was grinning. Sing for us. So we started singing, what was that song? As we stroll along together, we sang it, we was in harmony. And who are these guys? What's all that in the back? They made them pull out all the band equipment and miss messing with them. Okay, you can load it all back up again. I'm gonna still kill you. This is the kind of language they tell us, right? And they were just to harass us, to let us know. We're watching you, we know who you are.
The Lumpin' are battling another force besides the authorities, and it's coming from within the party.
And there was people that wasn't into the Lumpin'. They didn't think revolutionaries should be doing that kind of thing. But they were older people, too. You know, they wasn't R&B people. They were blues people. And during that time, there was a difference. Most of the leadership of the party was Southern guys. Southern guys like blues. We are young guys. We like R&B.
Well, I think some people may have thought of it as not being important, that not understanding how important the culture was to getting the message out.
But that didn't stop them. It's November 10th, 1970, at Merritt College in Oakland. It's the alma mater of Huey Newton and Bobby Seale, the birthplace of the Black Panther Party. Tonight, to a packed auditorium, the Lumpen will get the message out.
Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, the Black Panther Party very proudly presents the Lumpen!
Bear in mind, this group has been together for less than a year. While almost everybody else in the San Francisco music scene has been getting high and jamming, the Lumpen have been working as full-time revolutionaries, pursued by the police and the FBI, and they still got this together. And tonight is special. The show is being recorded for a live album, and the group pulls out all the stops. Billy Jennings is there with his fist in the air.
It was one of the best shows in my life because the audience was electrified. You know, once the Lumpen came on and the band started playing, you would hear them repeat something to the crowd and the crowd would throw it back. Like when they say all power to the people, the crowd say all power to the people with a force. And when they said death to the fascist pigs, they said death to the fascist pigs.
Death to the fascist pigs.
If you just listen to the people's feedback alone, you can just get high on that.
Yeah.
They were killing me, boy, when I heard that. And even to this day, when I hear it, it just gives me that revolutionary enthusiasm, you know, because everybody was on the one that night. We were thinking about the same thing, you know, the revolution.
The show was an undeniable success, but no album ever appeared. The master tapes made that night went missing, and have never been found. Some have suggested they were confiscated by the FBI. It's also possible they were mislabeled and disappeared in the chaos and discord of the time period. Or they could be decaying in an attic somewhere, long forgotten. Only a grainy multi-generation cassette of the show has ever surfaced, but it captures the raw power of the band. As 1971 arrives, the Panther Party leadership is in chaos. Bobby Seale is still in prison in New Haven. Eldridge Cleaver, the Minister of Information, has fled to Algeria to escape an attempted murder charge on an Oakland cop. In a CBS interview with reporter Mike Wallace, Cleaver makes his feelings about violence against authority figures abundantly clear.
When the American people hear that you want to shoot your way into the United States Senate, take off the head of a senator.
And take off the head of Richard Nixon, you see?
Well, what does that mean? This is rhetoric?
This is not rhetoric.
In February of 71, Cleaver and Huey Newton appear on the live TV show AM San Francisco.
We've got lots of things coming up here on AM this morning. Lots of things that you'll like to see, and we're looking forward to them too, right here on AM.
Newton is recently out of prison after serving almost 2 years for manslaughter, and a serious falling out has been growing between the men. Now it's coming to a head. For this interview, though, neither one is actually in the studio. The show is broadcasting a live phone call. When AM San Francisco booked these men, the producers expected things might get heated. And they were right.
You hear?
Yeah?
The intercommunal section is expelled.
That's not the best way to deal with that.
Well, is this the way I'm going to deal with it?
Well, then I think you're a madman, too, brother.
But I'm not a coward like you, brother, because you'll run off to get little Bobby Hutton killed. But I stay here and face the gas, you see? So you're a coward and you're a punk, you understand?
I think you've lost your ability to reason, brother.
Hey, brother, you heard what I call you. That's what I feel about you now.
Okay,
you're a punk.
So what you just heard was two of the leaders of the Black Panther Party firing each other from the Black Panther Party on live TV. This bizarre public fight factionalizes the group, which falls completely into disarray.
Outside my window, I hear a shotgun sing. This is the price that oppression brings. A victory for the people, a pig blood in the street. We've got to move now to make it all.
There were some other things going on internally in terms of some of the things that was being done by Huey that I didn't agree with, I didn't join for. And it wasn't about the police. I was never scared about the police. It's a bad thing when you get more concerned about the people that you work with than you do with the cops.
As the atmosphere within the party becomes more desperate, interest in the group from those in power dwindles to almost nothing. The Lumpen members are reassigned. They're taken off of R&B duty and put on security detail. Their days as a singing group are numbered.
We had people who wanted to exercise their position as being in charge. All those things can play into it. Petty spitefulness, all that.
We never thought of ourselves as anything other than Panthers. And the Lumpen was a cadre, a unit for a cultural purpose. You know, we loved it. We enjoyed it. But in the big picture, it's just another assignment. And so when the situation and circumstances change, then you move on to the next assignment. You know, and we didn't really have time to mourn about it. Because that's exactly what happened.
On May 23rd, 1971, in Sacramento, the Lumpen play their final gig. A few days later, Bill Calhoun decides to leave the party completely. He was the group's songwriter. So, only 11 months after it began, the band is done. But the Panther Party is still Michael Torrence's life. It's all he's known since he was a teenager.
You know, I was loyal to it. I had committed my life to it. I had every intention, as far as I was concerned, at least at that point, that was going to be my life.
Which brings us to a night in 1973 at a bar in West Oakland. After 5 years in the Panthers, Torrence needs a break. He needs to take care of his young daughter. Upstairs in a side room, he talks to Panther leader Bobby Seale.
So anyway, I go to Bobby at his birthday party at the lamppost, and I sit down with him, you know, and I said, well, Chairman, I have a daughter. She needs some support. Plus, I'm having these little anxiety attacks. It's affecting my work. It's affecting my effectiveness. I don't want to quit. I don't want to leave, but I need some time. Get myself back together, and then I'm coming back. And Bobby was real cool with me on it, you know. I'm crying. I'm shedding tears.
Torrence is leaving the bar when Huey Newton calls him back upstairs. He says the party will contribute $50 a month for Torrence's daughter's support. Then Newton puts a gun to Torrence's head and says this.
Okay, then. We sent $50. But you say, all power to the people. All power to the people. So I stuck around. And about 6 months later, one of the guys from Chicago comes by and he says, you still want to go? He said, because we can't afford to pay for your kid no more. You can go now. You can leave now. Okay. Well, all right, too. Power to the people now.
And that's it. Michael Torrence is out of the Black Panthers.
And it was traumatic. What was traumatic for me was leaving. What was traumatic for me was what it had become.
Did you feel betrayed by
it? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Betrayed, angry, bitter, frustrated. Yes, because the party was my world. That's what you're asking me, who am I? I said, I'm a Panther. You know, that's what I was, that's who I was. And then to lose that, you know, and try to get back to adjusting out here, you know, and trying to get a job, you know, and what can I put on my resume? where you been the last 5 years?
But Torrence did have something on his resume that worked outside of the revolution, the lumpen. It got him a job. Torrence wound up singing behind Marvin Gaye, and he appeared on the singer's 1974 album, Marvin Gaye Live. Torrence went on to write, produce, and sing for other artists for the rest of the 70s.
From Watts to Brownsville, we find misery.
Though he parted ways with the Panthers almost 50 years ago, the whole experience is still very much a part of it.
As far as the Black Panther Party is concerned, I don't regret anything. No, I wouldn't take that back for anything. We made some mistakes, yeah. But at the time, and for what it was right on time. And I was just glad to be a part of it. We never did it to get famous. We never did it to get rich. We did it because we really wanted to do something for our people and make a change.
Yes, on our streets and poverty.
Peter Gilstrap reported that documentary about the Black Panther Party's house band, The Lumpin'. It originally aired on KCRW's Lost Notes. If you're a fan of the stories that we bring you here on the California Report magazine, we are looking for listeners like you to participate in a short survey so we can learn more about what you'd like to hear on the show. You can help us out by visiting kqed.org/TCRMagSurvey. That's kqed.org/TCRMagSurvey. The California Report magazine is a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our senior editor is Victoria Malleon. Our director is Amanda Font, and our technical producer is Rob Spate. Ariella Markowitz is our intern. I'm Sasha Coca. This is the California Report magazine. Your state, your stories.
Support for the California Report comes from Hint, fruit-infused water in over 25 flavors, like watermelon, pineapple, and blackberry. No sweeteners, no calories. In stores or delivered from drinkhint.com. The James Irvine Foundation committed to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. Learn more at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.